The economic crisis in the Eurozone has been going on for almost 2.5 years now, and there have been growing concerns about Spain's economy for months. In recent days, those anxieties have led to speculation that Spain will ask for a bailout. Joining me now for a look at the situation and how the rest of the Eurozone is reacting to it is Peter Spiegel. He's the Brussels Bureau Chief for the Financial Times. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show for today's first backstory segment. Hello, Peter.
Good to be back.
There have been concerns about the strength of the Spanish economy for over a year. What's changed in the last few weeks that has had more and more people talking about a bailout for the country?
Well, I mean, you mentioned the Greek situation, and it's always one of these things in the Eurozone is that so much is based on confidence. And once it became clear that Greece was becoming even a greater mess, that the last election where you had a party that had outright rejected the bailout terms, raising the risk of Greece actually leaving the euro, you saw the markets begin to panic again and selling peripheral bonds, basically bonds of the other troubled countries in the south in particular. And Spain was the one that is just in most trouble. It's got a banking sector that suffered a very similar sort of U.S. housing bubble collapse. So they all had all these bad mortgages. And if you look at sort of U.S. housing prices to Spanish housing prices, you know, the U.S. really had a collapse 2-3 years ago. Spanish housing prices were slowly decreasing. They really hadn't had a bursting of the bubble. But what you've seen over the last 6 months, if the Spanish economy slowed, is a real drop in the price of Spanish housing, which meant the mortgages that all these banks held basically went bad. And suddenly people woke up to the fact that Spanish banks are collapsing. At the same time, you had the Greek situation. So you basically had this perfect storm of a already weak Spanish economy being brought down by the banking sector, plus Greece, plus a country that already is in a deficit situation that is basically untenable. They're piling debt upon debt on an annual basis. And it is, other than the three bailout countries, it's the country with the worst economy and the worst budget deficit and the worst banking sector, and just caught up with them in the end. And we're really looking at a place right now that the Eurozone is very, very nervous that its fourth largest economy is going to have to be bailed out entirely.
Well, are the problems largely because of government policies or because these banks have been messing up, mismanaged?
It's a combination of things. I mean, the banking crisis is what makes Spain different than everything else. I mean, again, it's very similar to the U.S. situation. If we remember, and I know he's one of the most hated men in America now, but when Hank Paulson went to Congress and said, I need $700 billion to recapitalize our banks, Congress took 24 hours, but they actually gave it to him. And eventually, they injected capital into the banks. The banks were stabilized, and everyone had renewed confidence in the banking sector in the U.S., and that was 3 years ago. Europe has gone through, particularly the Spanish and the Irish, have gone through a very similar housing collapse, but they never said, this is how deep the hole is, this is how we're going to shore up the banks, how we're going to bail them out, having to recapitalize them. They've just let them bleed for months, if not years. Finally, now what we're seeing is Spain has hired outside advisors to dig into the books and finally say, okay, how bad is it really? What is the numbers that need to be pumped in this banking sector? And the question is, where is that money going to come from? The estimates are anywhere from 40 billion euros to 90 billion euros. And Spain, if the numbers start getting that high, Spain is not on its own able to raise that money to bail out its banks. That's why we're talking about a rescue from Europe, another bailout. Focus on the banking sector that basically has to bail out most of these Spanish banks.
Now, there was,
it's a huge number.
There was talk of nationalizing banks in this country, but that's what's happened in Spain. The bank with the biggest problems, Bankia, was nationalized early last month. Does that look like it will improve the situation?
It hasn't yet. I mean, Bankia was basically a conglomeration of seven smaller banks. They're called cajas, and these are these regional savings banks. There's no real equivalent in the U.S., but they're basically small regional banks that were very heavily politically oriented. So you had really bad loans to politically connected cronies, and they were the ones that were the most invested in this horrible housing bubble. They all collapsed, and the previous Spanish government said, what a great idea. Let's put them all together in one bank and say, all right, we will shore up this one bank, and that will seem like it's new. but actually the underlying assets were still really, really bad. It had to be nationalized. The original estimates on the nationalization was, you know, maybe 5 billion euros needed to be pumped into it. Now the Spanish government is saying 19 billion euros. I mean, the numbers keep changing. I don't think we're going to see nationalization of any of the other banks. I mean, some of the major banks there, like Santander, which actually has quite a bit of exposure in the UK and elsewhere, are actually quite solid banks. But Bankia and some of these other cajas are going to need an injection of capital. And it's probably not going to be nationalized, these other banks, but you'll see a huge amount of money used to prop up these banks because of these bad loans.
Now, Spain held a bond auction earlier today where 2.1 billion euros of bonds were sold. That was slightly more than they had planned. Does that indicate that investors are more hopeful than we had thought? Because they were sold at 6% interest, and that seemed to calm fears. It would have been a lot worse if they had gone at 7%, which would have been seen as a crisis situation.
I mean, it's really on that cutting edge, right? I mean, 6% is seen as sustainable, 7% isn't. To be honest with you, neither of those are really sustainable in the long term. And let's remember, the U.S. now is borrowing at 2%. I mean, if you were to mortgage your house right now, you'd get a 30-year loan from your bank. You'd probably get, you know, 3.5%, 4%. Spain is borrowing at a worse rate than the average American homeowner can. I mean, that tells you all, and double the rate at this point. That tells you what kind of credit the Spanish government has at this point. 6.5%, how long can they sustain that? I mean, it's anyone's guess. I mean, debt sustainability is one of these sort of, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. It depends on who thinks and who analyzes. But everyone pretty much acknowledges as it gets closer to 7.5% that is an area where Spain becomes untenable. And so the point of this whole bank bailout is let us go to where the problem is. Let us just throw money at the Spanish banks and convince investors that is where Spain has its problems. Once we shore up the banks, everything else about Spain is fine. So the sovereign, if you want to buy sovereign debt in Spain, you want to buy their bonds, you don't need to lend them at 6%. You can lend them at 4%, 3%. The biggest problem is Spanish banks. So that is the strategy right now. They want to do a bailout, focus very specifically on the banks. So in that respect, it would be very different from Greece or Ireland or Portugal, which is actually a proper sovereign bailout. It would be very focused on injecting money into the banks. The Spanish government would stay in the bond market, and the hope is that once the banking sector is recapitalized, people will start lending, and the bond auctions for Spain would come down to, again, to 5 to 4 to 3%, where actually Spain's debt starts looking like actually it can deal with it. On an annual basis over the next few years, it can start paying down this debt and people stop worrying about it so much. That's the plan. But right now, the bond market isn't cooperating. As you said, 6%, you know, that's a sign there's not full-scale panic, but it's still double what the average American homeowner can borrow at. And that tells you all you need to know about how people view Spain right now.
And now, adding to the problems, Fitch just announced that it will downgrade Spain to a BBB rating. And all European stock markets are down as a result. So this feels like a bit of a roller coaster ride.
It is. It is. And that is because largely because of Greece. I mean, everything comes back to Greece. And everyone sort of, every time I give speeches or I talk to people, I say, how can one small little country on the corner of Europe be causing so much crisis? And the reason is because they let a small little country on the outskirts of Europe cause the crisis. They have been so bad at managing Greece that everyone says, gosh, if you can't handle this small little country, how are you going to handle a big country like Greece? Or even worse, Italy, which has 1.7 trillion euros in debt, basically the second or third largest debt market in the entire world. I mean, there's not enough money in the entire world to bail out Italy. And so the concern is, if you can't handle this one small country and figure out how to get its act together, you can't handle Spain, you can't handle Italy. And that's why stock markets are panicking. That's why bond markets are panicking. They worry that the politicians in Europe just don't have the political will and the political wherewithal to handle what lies ahead. And it's all about expectations. It's all about confidence. And they've just lost the confidence of the financial markets.
My guest is Peter Spiegel. He's talking to us on Backstory about a possible Spanish bailout. We'll also talk a bit about Greece. He's the Brussels Bureau Chief of the Financial Times. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So we're going to see another election in Greece on June 17th. The last one didn't end with any real ability to resolve the problem there. Many are hoping that it will bring some stability to the political situation. Is there any chance it will help bring some economic stability as well?
There is a chance. It is a very small chance, I must say, however. I mean, the problem with the last election is basically, much like other European countries, Greece is going to be ruled by a coalition. No one got a majority enough to actually form a government in the Greek parliament. And so the government fell again, and you had to have new elections. The polls right now show that there are basically two parties, the sort of the center-right conservative party, the sort of the Republicans of Greece, which is called New Democracy, and the far-left radicals, which we don't have an equivalent to the U.S. So basically the Democrats of Greece have been fallen out of the picture. They're called PASOK, and they're gone. The far-left radicals are polling neck and neck with the center-right party. And basically, the center-right party has signed up to the terms of the bailout agreement, and the far-left party has said, no, we want to scrap this agreement. And the polls basically they're barred for the last 2 weeks, so we're right now in a dark place. But, you know, 48 hours ago, when the last polls were taken, the center-right party, New Democracy, and the radical-left party, Syriza, were basically neck and neck at about 27% apiece. So one of those parties are going to be the lead party in Greece and be told to form a government. And it really is neck and neck now whether you elect a party in Greece that is going to go forward with the bailout and accept the terms of the money, or a party that comes in basically says, no, we don't want this bailout anymore, raising the prospect of a full-scale default and raising the prospect of Greece being ejected from the euro. And that is what everyone is very nervous about.
And a return to the drachma.
Return to the drachma. And what everyone is very nervous about is once you start that domino falling, who's next? Who's the bond market in the next? Everyone suspects it's going to be Portugal, but what if it is Spain? What if it is Italy? And that's when people begin to realize, actually, the euro is untenable as a currency. I mean, the reason is, I mean, think about it. If you are a owner of a bank account in, let's say, Spain, okay, and you wake up one day and you just have seen that every Greek holder of a bank account has had their euros turned into a drachma, gosh, you wake up and say, why am I keeping my money in my Spanish bank? That could be turned into peseta. Or if I'm an Italian, that could be turned into lira. You suddenly withdraw all your money from the banks. Every single major bank in the European periphery has a bank run, and that's the collapse of the entire European banking system. And that is when the euro stops happening. And the nervousness is that it could be a couple weeks away. You've already started to see runs on Spanish banks. The amount of outflows from Spain over the last 3 months have been in the order of 100 billion euros. So there is a nervousness. We're seeing a slow-motion bank run right now, and that really would be the end of things here, and that's the nervousness right now.
Well, Germany has been seen as the country that has been preventing any, has been unwilling to move on this, but we have heard recently they are considering measures that weren't on the table before. They said that they're considering the possibility of pooling debt across the Eurozone with conditions. Something they've opposed for a long time. I'm assuming there's been an awful lot of pressure being put on Angela Merkel that would move her in that direction, but the German public doesn't want her to move.
No, I mean, and you can see why. I mean, everyone acknowledges that the only solution is the most healthy and largest economy in Europe, which is Germany, basically has to step in and say, I've got all your backs. I will cover all of you. And if you go to my earlier scenario where you have a bank run, what most people agree is the only way to prevent a bank run is for Germany to say, we will pool all our resources and we will guarantee every bank account in the Eurozone. Well, if I'm German and I'm paying some fees on my banks to support the German deposit guarantee scheme, like the FDIC in the U.S., why would I agree to allow my money to go guarantee Spanish bank accounts? I mean, it's a politically explosive decision that Merkel is trying to bring her population with her. But to be perfectly honest with you, critics of her say she has been incredibly cowardly in that regard. She should have done it 2 years ago when we saw this was coming. She should have moved her public along very early. The problem is this has been going on now for 2 years, and the German public has gotten angrier and angrier and more anti-Europe and more anti-the South. And it's gotten more difficult for some of these northern countries. I mean, the allies the Germans have in the Eurozone are basically the Dutch and the Finns. I mean, the Dutch have an election coming up in September. We've seen public opinion polling now that shows the two extreme parties in the far left and the far right are basically at 50% right now. I mean, a core member of the Eurozone, a founding member of the EU, a founding member of the Euro, a founding member of the NATO, they are going to have a parliament potentially that has a far left and a far right party that want to get out of the Euro. When that kind of stuff happens, decisions about how to rescue the Eurozone go out the window because no government can actually do it anymore. Finland, the same thing's happening. You're seeing this radical True Finns party, which is also advocating getting out of the Euro. I mean, they polled 20% in the last national elections, almost became prime minister. So you're seeing the politics in these northern wealthy countries go the wrong way. They don't want to help out anymore. And the Angela Merkels of the world are increasingly getting voted out of office. These mainstream politicians. I mean, we saw the French election just a couple months ago. In the end, it was a mainstream politician who became president. But the first round of French elections, 30% of the vote went to the far right and the far left, who were running on a very anti-Euro campaign. Again, a core member of the EU and of the Eurozone, France. He's 30% of the voters supporting parties that are on the radical fringe, wanting to get out of the EU. And that's very dangerous politically. And that's the nervousness here, is that have we acted too late? Are the Germans acting too late? Yes, there are signs they're moving in the right direction, but is it now politically the wrong time? Should we have done it 6 months, 12 months, 18 months ago? And is it now politically impossible to do the things we need to do?
Well, this crisis has been going on for years now, and no overarching plan has been put in place. There have been moves toward austerity. There have been other suggestions. How has the European Central Bank responded to Spain's problems?
Well, it's in this strange middle world. I mean, to be honest with you, the ECB is the only institution in Europe that has been acting in a proactive, you know, meeting with the markets kind of time frame. I mean, in the December time period, they pumped about €1 trillion into the European banking system when it really seemed like the European banks were about to collapse for some of these reasons we've been talking about. The problem
is this similar to what Ben Bernanke has been doing in this country?
Exactly. I mean, the Federal Reserve Bank in the U.S. and the Bank of England and almost every major central bank in the world is allowed to do these kinds of things. You help fund the banks, and then you also buy sovereign debt. I mean, you know, in the U.S. it's called quantitative easing. They have bought U.S. Treasury bonds to try to lower interest rates and convince people to lend and to participate in the real economy. The ECB, because of the Germans, is barred by law from doing that kind of thing. So there's only so much they can do. What the Spanish are asking is, hey, would you please step into the bond market and buy up Spanish bonds? That would, of course, bring Spain's borrowing rates back down from the numbers we were talking before, 7-6%. If the ECB actively went into the bond market and started buying up Spanish bonds, you can get down to 4-5% where Spanish debt becomes sustainable. But because the way the EU is set up, at Germany's insistence, the ECB cannot do that. It is legally barred from buying bonds. It has done it in the past, trying to get around the rules, but the new head of the ECB, Mario Draghi, has basically put the kibosh on buying Spanish bonds. So they have been unable to help Spain in the sovereign bond market. They've done quite a bit to help Spanish banks by pumping them with money, but that had only sort of a temporary sugar rush effect. I mean, that's already, you know, we had about enough, January, February, March period, we had a bit of a quiet time here in the Eurozone, but it's come back in a vengeance that everyone realized that was not even enough money to shore up Spanish banks. So the ECB has been the most proactive, but as Mario Draghi, the head of the bank, has testified again and again, the bankers can't solve this. It's up to the politicians, and thus far the politicians have proved unwilling to make the hard decisions that will be unpopular and may get them thrown out of office, but really need to be done to solve this problem.
Well, over the last 2 years, there's been an ongoing debate throughout the Eurozone about whether austerity measures are more appropriate than measures that encourage growth, and that's been a reason the fringe parties have been doing so well. Has austerity been successful where it has been treated as a cure-all?
It's been successful in very limited cases. I mean, the case that's always brought up is Estonia. Small little country that had a severe austerity measures imposed, had a very deep recession, but it's bounced back quite well. But Estonia is not Spain. It is, you know, Spain is a large, mostly closed economy, and in a country like Spain, despite the fact being implementing huge amount of austerity, the debt levels have gone nowhere, because what happens is you impose austerity, economic growth slows, that means your tax receipts go down, which means you can't pay off your debts with any revenue, and so it becomes this what they call a debt spiral. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where it gets worse because you're imposing austerity and trying to cut your budget. It is a vigorous, vigorous debate here in Europe, much as it is in the U.S. right now, about, you know, whether the solution out of this crisis is cutting spending. The problem is that because most of the countries that are in trouble, like Spain, like Greece, now can't borrow unless they get pay a whole lot of money to borrow, they can't stimulate. I mean, if Spain decided they wanted to borrow a bunch of money and spend on infrastructure projects, for instance, they'd have to borrow at 6.5%. I mean, that's unsustainable. The U.S. now can do it because it's borrowing at 2%. Who can borrow at cheap rates in the Eurozone right now? The Germans. The Germans can borrow actually at record lows, 1%. They've had bonds that go up in 0%. Germany is unwilling to borrow and spend and stimulate. It is the one country in the Eurozone that can really stimulate spending. It can borrow at low rates, but it is against basically all German economic thinking to spend in a time of recession.
Peter,
they don't want to do it. They don't want to pull up the rest of the Eurozone, and that's the real crisis right now.
We don't have much time, but I have to ask you one more question about British Prime Minister David Cameron, who earlier today visited Berlin to discuss the Eurozone with Angela Merkel. And he was quoted as saying, clearly, the Eurozone crisis is the biggest threat to the world economy today. Now, obviously, it's a big threat to the UK, although it's not a member of the Eurozone. But is he right?
No, I think he absolutely is right. And I'll tell you, it's not just people in Britain who are worried about this. The White House is worried about this. I mean, you know, you have a bit of a fight going on right now between Obama's political advisors and his economic advisors, because they are really worried, as you know, that the entirety of Obama's election prospects right now are riding on the U.S. economy. If Greece were to blow up in the middle of that, you know, with all the interlinks across the Atlantic, both in the financial system but also in the economic system, and the U.S. exports a huge amount to Europe. I mean, a lot of these companies are really reliant on auto and Boeing, you know, ships planes here, and the real big manufacturing sector in the U.S. is very reliant on Europe. If that were to blow up in the middle of Obama's reelection campaign, you would see economic growth in the U.S. that's already stalling really collapse. And they are really worried about this. And you have some of his political advisors saying, we have to start publicly criticizing the Europeans now so we can say we were warning the Europeans way back when election day comes, saying it's not our fault, it's the Europeans' fault. But some of the more sort of the policy people who really want to work with the European, Tim Geithner in particular, have been urging him, no, let's work constructively with the Europeans. They don't respond well to public hectoring. Let's try to work behind the scenes. We saw that at the G8 meeting at Camp David, where Obama was sort of pushing Merkel, you know, sort of quietly and behind the scenes. So it really is a risk to the global economy. You know, if the U.S. goes down, the rest of the global economy goes down. I mean, we have to remember, Europe is the second largest economy in the world if you take the EU put together. If it was to collapse, it would be a return to the bad old days of 2008 post Lehman Brothers. There's no doubt about it. And that's why every global leader right now is concerned about it. We're having a G20 summit coming up in Mexico City at the end of the month. The only thing on the agenda is the Eurozone crisis, because everyone is worried about it.
Peter Spiegel is the Brussels Bureau Chief for the Financial Times. Thank you so much for talking with us on today's first Backstory segment.
My pleasure.